welcome to a special edition of the Wisconsin Badgers Journal Sentinel podcast. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast, and I've got kind of a special twist today. I am joined by my colleague Mark Stewart at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He, like me, has spent a ton of time covering prep sports in Greater Milwaukee, but for these purposes, I want to go back to the 1999-2000 men's basketball season when the Wisconsin Badgers went to the Final Four. We're creeping up on two decades. We're about the 19 years now since the Badgers went on an unlikely run to the Final Four, and Mark Stewart was covering the Badgers at the time, so I wanted to get his thoughts on some of what he remembers from that season. And then next week we'll have an even more interesting episode. Not to discredit how interesting this one is going to be, Mark. Sorry about that, but we'll catch up with some of the players from that team. I've got a pretty big audio package to share with everybody about the perspectives from players on that team. A lot of names you may remember. And you should know this guy, Mark Stewart. You are a long tenured member of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel media team. This is because you covered Badger basketball and Badger football back in the day, correct?
Yeah. I was the lead person for basketball. I did that for 10 years, and then I supported Jeff Patricus and his Taco Bell habit for 10 years doing with the football team. But I was able to travel with both. So it was There are worse jobs to do out there.
Definitely. And yes. You saw some bad basketball, some bad Wisconsin Badgers basketball, but also some good. You were kind of there for this transition period where, you know, they went from a team that was, you know, barely on the radar in the Big Ten to being a team that goes to the NCAA tournament just about every year. I guess, like, in broad strokes, before we get into the specifics of 99-2000, when Dick Bennett became part of this team, do you remember thinking right away, okay, he's really getting this team to turn the corner? Because they had tried a lot of other things. Stan Van Gundy, Stu Jackson, none of that. There was no momentum there. So, like, what do you remember about that sort of transition?
Now, I guess in the interest of disclosure, now, you know, I came in, you know, toward the end of the Dick Bennett era. But what I remember of the transition is, I mean, I think of that when Dick came in, I think there was the, you know, strides had already been made in the program. The program wasn't, you know, you could see light at the end of the tunnel, but you could see that, you know, the program was better. And then I think, you know, Dick came in and built off of what was there before, you know, with what Van Gundy and Stu Jackson had done, and even, you know, Yoder before that. And so, you know, it's just kind of a building process. You know, I guess what you realize in retrospect is, you know, as much as you want, you know, fans might want their program to make this immediate rise, if you look at these programs, you know, it comes in stages. And obviously those 5 years that Dick, you know, was running the program, I mean, that was a major step in, you know, what Wisconsin basketball could be.
What did you think, because you've obviously seen things from the prep sports angle, and maybe not in sequential order where you would really be able to tell sort of how what these players were like that Dick Bennett was recruiting. But what did you, I guess, what was your impression of the guys that they brought into the program? Because obviously they fit Wisconsin's style. Is it that they couldn't recruit the higher level guys in Wisconsin because the program wasn't there yet, or they really were focusing on very specific types of players?
You know, I mean, I think, and you know, when Mike Kelly and Andy Kowski were recruited, I was actually doing high school stuff at the time.
Oh, okay, cool.
And you know, at the time, you know, Andy was more of a prospect, you know, at least in my vision. I don't remember
more like a top flight prospect. You mean, right?
Yeah. I mean, he was a guy that you would look at and say, okay, this is a Division I guy.
Right.
You know, Mike Kelly, he was a good high school player. I think their junior year they had won state, and he had a really great performance in that state final game. Kind of foreshadowed his, you know, what he would be at Wisconsin. Just a great defensive performance. You know, just made plays. You know, little plays that were ended up being big. But I didn't necessarily see him as like a, you know, a Division I kind of guy.
Right.
But obviously he proved that wrong. But, you know, he wasn't as obvious, at least to me, you know, from what I saw. So, I mean, I think they, you know, they just, you know, like most coaches, especially in Wisconsin, where you don't have this huge base of stereotypically talented players, you know, the guys that just wow you, you got to kind of have a system. You know, we see it, you know, with what Barry Alvarez did in football back in the day where you say, okay, how can I win here with the kind of kids that I can recruit consistently to this program? And I think, you know, that's sort of what you saw with, you know, what Wisconsin was doing at that time is, you know, they brought in, and you know, I think that Dick's first class was a five-man class.
Yeah.
And
a lot of the guys we're going to talk about here.
Right, right. And they were all, you know, solid players that, you know, it's kind of, I assume he planned this, you know, but you look at how they came together, and it was almost like, you know, five fingers. You know, they had, you know, they all did something, and they all really complemented each other well.
Yeah, and obviously we'll talk a little bit about that. Some of those guys, Mike Kelly, Andy Kowski, and Mark Vershaw, are the three that jumped to mind right away, were key contributors, juniors on this 99-2000 team that, as we mentioned, ended up going to the Final Four. What do you remember about that season? Because they're a 500 team in the Big Ten, and in fact had to win some games late in the regular season to even get to 500 in the Big Ten. They probably were going to go to the tournament. No, you know, like even with one or two more losses on their resume, because the Big Ten was really good that year. Michigan State, as many people remember, won the national championship and was pretty much the best team in the country. Purdue, obviously, an Elite Eight team as well. What do you remember about that team? Certainly, I'm sure you weren't thinking, oh, this team could go deep into the NCAA tournament. But like they had some good leaders. They had a bad performance in the NCAA tournament the year before, where I think they only scored 34 points. What sort of was your impression of them?
You know, my impression, you know, thinking back was that, you know, well, two things stood out to me. One, their schedule was crazy. You know, I can't remember specifically, like, you know, who they played or where they went, but they were, that was a time where they would play anybody. They would go on the road, and they had a phenomenal schedule. And, you know, the one thing that even though their record didn't show it, I always thought was that they could compete with anybody.
Right.
You know, the Big Ten was I think was probably the best conference in the country at the time. And even though the record was, you know, about 500, you know, they were very competitive in those games. And,
right.
And, you know, that was also around the time where, you know, things were starting to kind of turn around a little bit. And, you know, they would give the media these statistics about, you know, Wisconsin beating ranked opponents.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was
strength of schedule, I'm sure.
Yeah, strength of schedule. So those things were, you know, you'd see those things creep up, and they, you know, they'd have an upset or two over the course of the season. So I thought they were going to be, you know, I wasn't thinking Final Four, but I definitely thought this was a team that, you know, could compete with,
sure,
you know, in anyone you'd put them on the floor with.
It's just interesting, and one of the main cruxes of doing this is they had no all-conference players. First team, second team, third team, honorable mention. Literally nobody was recognized as an individual. And that's not a huge surprise. They were, like you said, five fingers. They were a team. And I know that's cliche, but that's really how they operated. Their defense was kind of their best player. But still, they didn't have a lot of, I guess, what you'd call stars. Who would you say was their best player? Because Mike Kelly kind of is the face, I think, of this, but I'm not sure he's necessarily. He certainly wasn't their best scorer. That would be Mark Vershaw. So, like, who was the player that you thought was kind of the guy for them?
Yeah, you know, the guy, that might be the wrong way to
right.
phrase
it. No, I think you're right.
To phrase it, you know, because it kind of depends on what you're looking for. I mean, like I say, I do think, you know, Mike is the guy that sort of embodied what that Dick Bennett era was about. But Mark Vershaw was a really talented, you know, he was a really talented, you know, player, especially on the offensive end, you know, in terms of being able to pass and being able to post up, but he also could shoot, you know, shoot three-pointers, you know, so he was a real skilled guy that way. But then if you needed a guy at the end of the shot clock to make a play for you, you know, I remember Roy Boone getting a lot of opportunities that way.
Roy Boone. I thought he was so good. You look at his numbers, and you're like, but I thought he was so good at the time.
Yeah, yeah, and he came in that junior year. That was his first year, and even though he was new, again, he just fit in because he added something that they needed. So so it's almost like, you know, who was their best player? You know, it's almost like, what do you like in a player? Andy Kowski was a guy, didn't score a lot, but was great defensively, rebounding, really good athlete, solid scorer, but, you know, wasn't going to really give you much, you know, outside the paint.
Right.
They were just a lot of, I mean, if you had to pin me down on who was their best player, I guess I would go with either, you know, Mike or Mark or
sure.
Vershaw.
Vershaw Kelly, yeah.
But again, it wouldn't be a slam dunk.
Right.
You know, it's, you know, they really complemented each other really well.
And I don't know if people remember how this was pieced together a little bit. You had that class, but like you said, Roy Boone came in, John Bryant came in from St. Cloud State, and he obviously ends up with the monster NCAA tournament. He's the most outstanding player of the regional, caught fire, had just a ton of three-pointers, seven, in fact, in the first game of the tournament against Fresno State, which we will talk about here shortly. But the thing that people remember about this was not pretty basketball. And you see what Virginia does now, one of the best teams in the nation under, of course, Tony Bennett, the son of Dick Bennett, who was on this staff at the time with the Badgers as an assistant coach.
He was the manager that year.
Sorry, yes, not as an assistant coach. Feels like he should have been at that point.
But yes, yes.
One of the brightest young managers in college basketball is probably how to put it. But Virginia's taken it to the next level because they implement this stuff with bona fide athletes that are like 4 or 5 star recruits, maybe not 5 star, but like top level recruits. Wisconsin was maybe making it a little uglier at the time because they weren't an offensive powerhouse by any means, but they were able to win a bunch of games. I mean, did you like this style of basketball? I think as a Wisconsinite, you sort of defend it a little bit, or at least I find myself doing that. But how did you feel about it when you watched it?
You know, well, a couple things. And I say this in jest. You know, the pace of play was very ideal for someone who's, you know, writing, has to write and take notes over the course of a game.
It's always about the writers. You learn that in this business. It's always about what makes life easiest for the writers.
So it was great from that standpoint, but you know, it was just, you know, what I remember about, you know, that year and sort of that era is just sort of you really come to appreciate what they were doing defensively. And I think eventually, you know, media kind of caught on to what they were doing and kind of understood that, hey, this is their identity. But what was really cool is if you went to the Kohl Center, it was just how, like, the fans embraced it. You know, I remember, I'm pretty sure they did this during Dick's era, is that the fans would stand until the opposing team scored.
Sure, okay.
And sometimes it would be a long time before the fans would sit down. And
they should at some point just be like, you know what, let's just do 5 defensive stops.
Yeah.
we'll just sit down then.
But it was and the fans would feed on this. It was almost like, you know, people think a team's getting on offensive runs. I think that team, they would get on defensive runs,
right.
And the fans would recognize that, and then they would realize that, hey, it's been like, you know, 2 minutes since they scored. Now it's been 5 minutes since they scored, and sometimes the reaction they would get after stops was, you know, like they would scored a basket.
Sure, sure.
What did I think of, you know, their style? I mean, you know, I was fine with it. I mean, it was, hey, you know, you want to, part of, you know, covering the team, you know, we don't root for the team. We don't carry the losses with us when we go home like the players do. But, you know, generally it's better to cover a winner.
Right. No, that's true. That's true.
And, you know, that style was working and it was creating interest for the team. And therefore it creates interest in, you know, as a reporter, it creates interest in what you're doing. So,
right.
You know, it was a good time. Now, those guys were, I'm rambling here, sorry. But
no, that's great.
Those guys were, I mean, those were just some top-notch guys when I think back on them. I mean, they were, not only were they, just good guys, and they think they've kind of shown that as they've progressed in life. But as a media person, I don't know what more you could ask for.
Right.
I mean, they were all great interviews. They all had interesting little, you know, storylines. Mark Vershaw was married. John Bryant comes from Division II. Roy Boone's the local guy who comes home.
No doubt.
Mike Kelly was just a great interview. Andy Kowski had this thing where I remember doing a story on Andy Kowski, and it was about his love of maps. And I think that sort of went into him, you know, what he did later. I think like engineering or something like that. He was interested in.
Yeah, he's still in the area. He lives in Brookfield.
Yeah, he was interested at the time in like how city planning, stuff like that. One of my memorable stories, Maurice Linton, I was chatting with him and I realized he liked to cook. Mm-hmm. At the time, and I did this story on him. At the time, he wanted to be a chef or something like that, and he was watching the Food Network, and he would cook for him and his roommate. I think he was living with Trevon Davis at the time.
Sure.
You know, it was just a lot of, there were a bunch of interesting guys. Besides this, just what they did in terms of the historical significance of it, it was just an interesting bunch of guys who – they were good players, but they had other stuff going on that made them interesting people.
I can't wait to share some of these interviews that I got, because I talked to all these guys. I talked to Linton and Kowski and Kelly and Versha and Bryant, and they are all interesting. And Dick Bennett, you know, they are all interesting guys. I wish I had known about the maps thing for Kowski. I would have called him the Cartographer, which I think is a pretty good name for like a basketball star, right?
Yeah,
an unusual nickname.
Yeah, I'm pretty. I hope my memory's not failing me on that, but I do remember he was interested in, you know, like city, you know. Sure. How cities were laid out, something to that effect, and I thought maps were part
kind of
this
thing.
Yeah.
Well, Madison's a mess, so he anytime you build a city around a Capitol dome, you're gonna need people who know their way around with maps. But let's get into the tournament a little bit, because they go through the Big Ten tournament, they win two games there, they lose to Michigan State, and we'll obviously talk about Michigan State. That point, they know they're getting in. I mean, it's safe, and it probably was safe before that, but at this point, they know they're getting in. They get into it as an 8 seed. And tackle Fresno State in the opening round. That's the 9 seed. Now, Fresno State, that is the game people remember the least, because they go on to beat 1 seed Arizona, LSU, which is a top 10 team, Purdue obviously to go to the Final Four, and Michigan State. Fresno State was a pretty good team. They had three guys, I think three or four maybe even, who ended up like getting a sniff in the NBA at the very least. Like, this was not a Melvin Eli, I don't think, had even quite gotten to the level he ended up getting to, and he was on that bench. I mean, they had guys who were very good. And that could have been a really big problem for a Badgers team that isn't as athletic, anything approaching the athleticism that Fresno State brought to the table. But this is the game where John Bryant hit 7 three-pointers and all 21 of his points from beyond the arc. They win the game, I think, by 10 points and move on. But especially fresh in their mind is this NCAA tournament game the year before where they scored 34 points at Southwest Missouri and wound up getting bounced in the first round, you know. I know that this was a big sigh of relief for the guys. They all sort of conveyed that was a pretty important win to them. What do you remember from the Fresno State game? This is in Salt Lake City, I think, right? Or Albuquerque? Salt Lake City.
This was, yeah, Salt Lake City.
Okay, I got the two sites confused with the two weekends. So Salt Lake City is where this game takes place.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying. You know, that is the game that I remember the least of. I do remember, Courtney Lee, and he was a guy that people were thinking of as a, you know, as an NBA type. You know, right. Type prospect.
I think it was Courtney Alexander.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Courtney Lee played at Florida.
Courtney Lee. Yes, I'm sorry. Too many
no,
Courtney.
No, that's okay. Tell
yeah,
me.
That's
tell
right.
Me.
Courtney Alexander, and you know, so I remember that, and you know, what I just remember about, honestly, I don't have a ton of memories from that game, other than I kind of thought after watching them that, you know, you talked about their individual talent, but that. It just didn't seem
to
gel. I mean, sometimes you might have these, you know, this individual talent, but it just doesn't come together like you think. I almost like, I don't want to seem like.
Sounds like the inverse of Wisconsin, which came together despite not having the individual talent.
Yeah, yeah. It was almost like, you know, you look at their stats and, you know, their prospects, and they were better individually than maybe they were as a team.
Right.
You know, because. You know, Wisconsin, like I say, they won what, by double digits, and that, from what I remember, you know, it was I don't know. It, as the game wore on, it didn't surprise me that Wisconsin was beating these guys.
Yeah.
I think they were just I just think they were maybe a little more disciplined in what they were doing, and obviously their defense was a great weapon that maybe people were just starting to figure out.
Dick Bennett talks about how Jerry Tarkanian, the famous coach who was coach at Fresno State at the time, did try to zone on them that they were not known for, and it did not work. Left a lot of openings on the perimeter, which the Badgers took advantage of, specifically with John Bryant. I can't wait to play for everybody. Like Mike Kelly and John Bryant had to say about Fresno State's defense. 20 years go by, they don't pull punches anymore. It's like, yeah, that was not a good zone. It's not good, and we took advantage of it. So at that point, and it's understandable why you might not have specific memories. These games probably run together a little bit, because 2 days later they're back playing the top seed in the bracket, and that's Arizona. And this is a game a lot of people remember. Kind of, you know, maybe what makes this run sort of interesting to me is that, like, they kind of whooped these teams. Like, LSU and Arizona were much better on paper, and Wisconsin didn't need, like, a last-second shot. They didn't need, like, a late run or a crazy set of circumstances. They just beat Arizona. The one thing they had going for them was that Loren Woods, who was the big man for Arizona and an NBA player eventually, was unavailable for the game. He was injured, so that definitely hurt the Wildcats' cause, but they still have a lot of NBA talent on that team, including current Lakers coach Luke Walton, Gilbert Arenas, who was a longtime NBA veteran, played, of course, for the Wizards for a while, and Richard Jefferson, whose career included stops with the Milwaukee Bucks. He had obviously a lot of success in the NBA as well. So these are some, you know, very talented roster. And the Badgers took it to them. They trailed once, 2-0, and then they led the rest of the way and upset the top seed, really frustrated them. What do you remember from that game? Because that's obviously the moment in time where it's like, oh, okay, this isn't just going to be – this is officially a successful postseason at this point.
Yeah, you know, I remember – I guess, let's see, I remember a couple – a moment. I remember, for whatever reason, I remember at the end of the game, Andy Kowski had this big punctuation. I'm pretty sure it was Kowski. He had this dunk at the end of the game that sort of, you know, was like in a time when Wisconsin wasn't doing a lot of dunks, was sort of like the signature highlight of the win.
He had a double-double in the first two games. He had a really good first weekend, if I recall.
Yeah. I mean, again, we talk, who's their best player? Which week is it?
Yeah,
you know, I mean, sometimes, you know, it varied there. You know, so I remember that, and I think for whatever reason, I remember Dwayne. I can't remember statistics.
Sure.
But I just remember, again, you know, just, you know, like you talked about how easy, you don't want to say easy, but like, you know, that they were just, you know, that these were pretty strong wins, even though, I mean, you can say, okay, Loren Woods is out, but I mean, if you look at the history of NCAA teams, when they got three NBA guys on your team,
yeah,
you usually went pretty far. And I think the next year that Arizona team actually went to the Final Four.
Sure.
I think,
was that Miles Simon and no, I'm in the wrong.
No, that was here. That was a little before, but
way
I think
before,
when when they I think that was they went to Minneapolis.
Sure.
The years are, sorry, the years
yeah, no,
are blending, you know, together for me. Again, I just remember, like I said, I remember Kowski for whatever reason. And I remember, I don't think I was surprised. I mean, I guess that was one thing. I just don't remember being really, like, surprised, you know, because even though their record wasn't great that year, you know, they played a lot of, they pretty much played everyone tough.
Right.
So any game I covered, I looked at it, and if they were in it in the final few minutes, it didn't surprise me because their schedule was so tough, and they had gone against this kind of competition, you know, throughout the year. So I don't remember being really surprised at that outcome for whatever reason.
Do you think it's different if Loren Woods plays? I mean, do you think things would have altered and Arizona would have won? I don't. It's like you said, like one player. I don't know if you've got all that NBA talent. If one player should have made a difference, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, well, he's 7-1, and he was an NBA guy. He probably would have made a difference. You know, who knows how much, you know, he would have been. But I mean, his talent speaks for itself. But you know, again, you know, talent doesn't always, you know, win. I mean, I think we're seeing this a little more now with the NCAA, where you're seeing, you know, these teams that are older seasoned teams making, you know, great runs in the tournament versus, you know, ones that maybe, you know, have the NBA talent, but they're maybe a little younger and they haven't had a chance to,
I've seen that a lot. That's a common theme.
You know, to gel. And, you know, so will Loren Woods have made a difference? I mean, he's 7-1 and he was a first round draft pick. So he probably would have, but would that mean that Wisconsin would have lost? You know, I don't want to say that. That's hard to gauge.
Well, and you look at how they defended in the next game. I mean, Wisconsin, one of their major strengths was just taking away post players. They had this trap going that really took away post players. I don't know if Loren Woods would have made that big a difference, judging on how they took care of Stromile Swift and Jabari Smith the following weekend in New Mexico. So let's go to that game. That's the Sweet 16. It is, again, in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and the two big posts, the Twin Towers, are the guys that LSU bring to the table. They were a 4 seed, but they're ranked number 10 by the end of the year. A lot of people thought that maybe that would even be a tougher matchup than Arizona, or at least it seems to have been the sentiment at the time. And once again, the Badgers just crushed them. They had they did not get 20 points in the first half. I don't remember what the score was. It was like 36-19 at one point early in the second half. I mean, it was a blowout. And I mean, at that point, I imagine you got to think, wow, I don't know what this Badgers team is capable of. Like, at that point, they can beat anybody, especially when you see Purdue is next. It's a team they'd beaten 2 out of 3 times in the regular, in the, you know, early part of the season. So, I mean, what resonates from that LSU game?
You know, now that, from that game, what stood out is, you know, I think that night Wisconsin played the second game. So, you know, typically, you know, for the first game, you might see some of the guys who playing in the second game. They might be out watching the first game just to pass the time.
Right.
And I remember, you know, Stromile Swift, who I think was an NBA draft pick with Memphis, and then Jabari Smith, I think, was, you know, another, was their big duo.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, they were in the arena. They were headed to the locker room, had their headphones on, and the strut of confidence with those guys.
This is before the game. Yeah.
I remember looking at those guys and thinking to myself that these guys think they're just going to, you know, they're going to, you know, put in some work on Wisconsin.
Right.
And they're headed to the Elite Eight. I mean, it looked like they had no care in the world. I mean, literally, that's when I looked at them. You know, it was just the confidence they went into with in that game, you know, was visible to me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, what happens, you know, with Wisconsin, and it probably happened with Arizona, and I don't remember it, is that, you know, all of a sudden that, you know, you have this confidence, you know, these teams come in with this confidence against Wisconsin, and, you know, because the way they play isn't pretty. And sometimes I assume maybe when you're looking at defense, it's hard to really understand how tough the defense is until you actually experience it.
I totally agree, right?
And then, you know, once Wisconsin's got you on the floor, it's too late.
Yeah.
You know, it's too late. And then all of a sudden you start thinking, okay, you know, oh, these guys can't play. So now I better ratchet up my own play. And it doesn't
start to rush.
And then it doesn't make a difference.
Right.
You know, I mean, that was one time where I thought visibly, you know, at least for those two guys, that there was a level of, like, they just, you know, I don't want to put thoughts or words in their mouth, but it just didn't seem like there was the sense of urgency or concern that Wisconsin was going to be a problem for them.
I don't even know if you can blame them. And I ask this of the guys a lot, if they felt disrespected or, you know, not in those words, because and they said to some degree, yes, that people didn't take them seriously. But I don't know why you would. They're an 8 seed, or, you know, they're a team that finished 500 in their conference. They had no all-conference players. And it's like, what are you afraid of? Like, yes, they're a good defensive team. But, you know, you make it to the Sweet 16. You got a lot of veterans. I mean, I'm sure in some respects people were like, yeah, they're a fine team. But you don't expect, when you've got NBA talent on your roster, you're going to have trouble with that. So it's – you know, they were, I guess, a little bit disrespect is probably the key to any team that's an underdog getting into the later stages of this tournament. But at the same time, I don't blame anybody. You know, like, I wouldn't have thought that Wisconsin team was dangerous. Nobody here thought they were going to the Final Four. So
I just remember them. You know, they faced a lot of good players, and just being able to, you know, they contained a lot of guys.
Sure.
I mean, I think there's a, you know, with the NBA-type talent, there's a lot of, you know, one-on-one skill that really kind of, you know, propels that player to that level. And I don't think in a lot of cases that worked against the way Wisconsin played defense.
Sure.
You know, that one guy wasn't going to be able to, you know, consistently, you know, create and you know, just – you know, I date myself, shake and bake, you know. I haven't heard that phrase in a while. But to do that stuff against them consistently. You know, so, you know, should they have been a little more concerned? I mean, obviously, given the circumstances, you would think, okay, hey, this is my chance to go to the Elite Eight. But, again, you know, and the other thing you got to think about is the Big Ten had to be the best conference in the nation
for
that
sure
year.
They were.
So, even though Wisconsin was a 500 team in that league, you know, you got to take that into account too, that, you know, maybe if they're in a different league, their record would have been better.
Oh, I think you're totally right. And we talked about the three teams that went to the Elite Eight. You've got Purdue, Wisconsin, and Michigan State. Ohio State, that's Scoonie Penn and Michael Redd. I mean, that wasn't the dearth, you know, that was a good Ohio State team. I think they might have taken second. in the conference. There were a lot of talent. I don't remember some of the other guys, but I know that there was a lot of talent in the conference.
And Ohio State, they may have went to the Final Four the previous year.
They may have, yeah. I think they probably did. 99.
So the league was loaded. And, you know, so that's another thing you got to take into account when you're thinking, okay, you know, when you look at their record and stuff, it was actually who they were, you know, who they were playing. And at that point, going through the Big Ten, you know, I don't think they were going to be able to, you couldn't have been much better tested for, sure, you know, for the tournament.
Right. Yeah, I think that Indiana team was very good. They got a big win against them late in the season. But it is another Big Ten team that they face here in the Elite Eight, and it's Purdue. And when I talked to the guys, you could definitely sense that this was the matchup they were the most concerned about of the first four, in terms of they weren't sure their stuff would work because Purdue had seen it before. Wisconsin had won two of the previous three meetings, so they're not the underdog anymore per se. Purdue's got the better seed. But that's a different type of matchup for them. And they had seen each other in the Big Ten tournament. Purdue obviously made it. It was a very good game. You know, I don't know if back and forth is really what it was, but it was tight kind of throughout. And then Wisconsin kind of got on a little bit of a late surge, took, I think, like a 4-6 point lead in the final minute and a half, and ultimately held on. They won by 4 points. I think it was 64-60. They go to the Final Four. That Purdue team, what do you remember about them? Brian Cardinal, I know, is their best player, but it seems like that was a really good, you know, a good matchup, a tough matchup for Wisconsin.
Yeah, they were. And Brian Cardinal, he played. He had a nice run in the NBA too. I mean, I did have this. You know, what I remember about that game as much was, you know, that was the one time where I started to think. You know, as a writer, you know, I'm just sitting there. I kind of got tunnel vision, you know, because, you know, you're just focusing on that next game because it might be the last game of the year. And then I'm...
Or you might have to get a flight to Indianapolis or a car or whatever.
Right. Or you might...
It's a very different world.
Yeah, you don't know what's going to happen. And that was the first game going into it that I thought, you know, Wisconsin can beat these guys. Yeah. I mean, they had already proven it, you know, beating them, you know, at home and then beating them in the Big Ten tournament. And, you know, at that age, at that time, they were never winning in West Lafayette, so you might as well just X that one off anyway.
Right.
You know, so again, it was like I just wasn't – I mean, there was a moment there was like, you know, wow, these guys – in the big picture, I was thinking, you know, wow, these guys could be going to the Final Four. But then in the actual matchup of the game, I thought to myself, well, you know, they can beat this team. Mm-hmm. And so, again, it was kind of – one of those weird circumstances where I wasn't surprised that they beat Purdue, you know, because they had, you know, again, it was a familiar opponent,
right.
and I don't know. I mean, I guess as a player, you might worry that some of your stuff might not work, but you know, as somebody writing and watching them, I just thought, you know, you've already proven you can beat them twice.
Yeah.
Just go do it again.
Yeah. The you know, Badgers win, sets off a crazy celebration. I remember where I was when I heard that news. It's just staggering. They hadn't been to the Final Four since 1941 or whatever. I think 41. And this wasn't the team that was going to break through. Like, there was no indication. Obviously, there were some signs, but not clear signs. Mike Kelly, when I talked to him, he told me a story about jumping onto a folding table, thinking it was just a standard press row, kind of a solid press row to celebrate, kind of mimicking what Khalid El-Amin had done the year before or a couple years before with Connecticut when they had won the title, gone to the Final Four, and he wound up, the table collapsed. He said there were writers there and computer carnage. I don't know if there were many laptops in 2000, but there was definitely some technology carnage there. But you don't. You said you don't remember that happening. You were not part of the table collapsing.
No. Thankfully, I was not. That's one of those things. Yes, I would remember in that moment the computer. I think I probably had already, you know, scurried off back to the interview area. But yeah, it's just like it was just crazy. It's like, you know, you're going through this and. You know, in the course of 2 weeks,
right.
so much changes. You know,
it's
true.
Four games is just nothing. Like,
yeah,
you know,
I mean,
it's crazy.
Four games. I mean, even if you go back to the end of the regular season, okay, what three and a half weeks? I mean, it was just such a, you know, you go from, you know, fighting to get into the tournament, and then all of a sudden you're like one of the four teams, and you're
right.
on the biggest stage, you know, of college basketball. It was just. I don't know. It was wild. I
mean, yeah. And that's sort of the nature of college basketball is unusual. You know, you don't really know the ultimate destiny, no matter how good a team is during. You know, it could be like Virginia last year and have it be a woeful season because you lose in the first round of the tournament. But, you know, Virginia is one of the best teams in the nation last year. So it's just things change very quickly at the end of the season. I vividly remember Rick Majerus coming on one of the ESPN sort of preview shows, and they were picking their Final Four champions, and he picked Wisconsin. Understandably, Rick Majerus, a little little homer pick, but I remember thinking that's not impossible. Like, they've beaten teams that are better, or just as good, I should say, as the ones that they're going to face in the Final Four. Like, no, I don't think they're going to win the whole thing, but like, it's actually possible that they could. This 8 seed could actually do it. I mean, North Carolina was in the Final Four. They were also an 8 seed, so it wasn't like North Carolina was necessarily scary if you saw them in the championship game, or Florida, I think, was a 2 seed. They had almost lost in the first round to Butler, if I recall, had won on a last second shot just to survive the first round, so Florida wasn't very scary. I mean, Michigan State was by far the best team in that Final Four, but it was conceivable that the Badgers could beat them. Before I get to that game, they come home after Albuquerque. They're going to the Final Four. There's this big celebration at Camp Randall Stadium. Did you make it back for that? Do you have any memories from that, or were you not there?
No, you know, I was not there. I think we must have had someone else,
sure.
You know, someone else, you know, covered that. You know,
that had to be wild.
You know, yeah, they're, you know, they're, you know, parade down, you know,
East Washington,
you know, Washington, you know, Avenue. So no, I didn't get a chance to see that.
Bummer. That would have been a fun time. But they celebrate. They get a few days to get themselves together, and then they get to stay a lot closer to home, ironically, because instead of headed out west to Salt Lake City or Albuquerque, now they're just going down I-65 to Indianapolis. And the Final Four sets up. Michigan State is a team that they had lost to 3 previous times during the season, twice in the regular season, once in the Big Ten tournament. This Michigan State team was exceptional. I mean, they go on to win the whole thing, but they've got Mateen Cleaves, Charlie Bell, Morris Peterson, kind of the big three there. Andre Hudson is their big guy. This is a very good team. You had seen them during the regular season, so you knew a lot about Michigan State. Did you think the Badgers, I mean, had they met their match at that point? Like, was there any, I'm sure there is a path to beating them, and especially when it's a 2-point game at halftime, but I don't know. Like, that's a really tough ask.
Yeah, you know, there was, my thought was, I guess, thinking back, my thinking going into that game is maybe they would be due, you know, sort of against Michigan State. Because, I can't remember the scores of the other games, but I think they had, you know, played maybe relatively decent against them, you know, except maybe for a run or two where
sure.
Michigan State would get on these runs, and then all of a sudden it's like, you know, what used to be a 4-point game, it's all of a sudden a 12 or 13 point, you know, kind of game. They were explosive like that.
And
so
that's how it happened in the semifinal. Like, it was 19-17 or whatever at halftime. Michigan State opened up the second half on that run. So
right. So that was my thinking. It was more along the lines of, okay, it's hard to beat a team, you know, 4 times in 1 year, and can this be the game that, because all you need is one. All you need is, like, you know, John Bryan or Dwayne or somebody to just get hot and you know, give you that little extra something, to that extra spark, you know, against a team like that. So that was my thinking. You know, obviously it was going to be a major, you know, I thought it was going to be a big challenge, but that maybe the odds were just in Wisconsin's favor just because they had been 0-3.
Right. So Michigan State wins that game. They go on to beat Florida 2 nights later, win the national championship. Tom Izzo hoists the championship trophy. But the legacy of this team is an interesting one, because I really do feel like without that team, without that success, I don't know if Wisconsin continues to ascend as rapidly as they did, because they were able to bring in, I don't know how much the success of that team led to the recruiting of guys like Orlando Tucker, Devin Harris. I mean, some of those guys probably were going to come to Wisconsin anyway in the immediate aftermath. You know, Mike Wilkinson was already there, you know, like already committed to them by the time this had happened, and ended up redshirting in the 2001 season before having a really nice career. But I feel like it put them on a trajectory. I mean, that's the second of 19 straight years of making the NCAA tournament, streak that was just snapped in 2018. They completely actually revolutionized the way they play basketball. I mean, that's, I think, the biggest surprise, is that when they go back to the Final Four in 2014 and 2015, it's nothing like what they did in 2000. This isn't a defense-first role, you know, a bunch of role players working together at all. It's high-flying offense, amazing offense, with guys like Frank Kaminsky and Sam Decker capable of working inside, outside. So that's the surprise, is that they were able to evolve to me and make a whole different style of basketball work. But I really do feel – I don't know what happens without this run. Like, I really feel like there was something – I can't put my finger on it – that took Wisconsin basketball into a different tier of basketball at that point. Do you feel that way, or do you think this existed sort of in a vacuum?
No, I don't think it existed in a vacuum. I think some things with programs come in stages. I mean, you know, you got to get – and this was obviously a key stage, but I don't think this stage doesn't happen without Michael Finley and Tracy Webster.
Oh,
and
for sure. Richard Griffith, man. And Richard Griffith.
I mean,
95?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that could be a whole different, another yeah. podcast. But, I mean, real quick, going back to when they got Richard Griffith, I mean, that was huge. He had to be like one of the top, he may have been the top recruit in the nation. And that was a sign of, you know, what Wisconsin could be. And I think, that 99-2000 team was also a sign that, hey, you know, we can win, Wisconsin can win big. And the way they did it made people think, well, okay, well, maybe if we get, maybe if we have a little, get guys who are, can play defense, but they can, have a little more, a little more offensively able, so to speak, yeah. you can take it to the next level. That was definitely the team where you can say, okay, we can do it here. You can win at Wisconsin. You don't have, as a coach, you can come here and you can achieve a national championship. It hasn't happened yet. They came close. It was kind of like I said, it was the team that said, hey, we can, you don't want to say they put Wisconsin on the map, but in a way they did. They sort of, yeah. I mean, and honestly, to the point where it's kind of funny, sometimes you listen to these, guaranteed if Wisconsin makes a run in the tournament, someone's going to start describing Wisconsin like they were playing 20 years ago, in terms
totally.
Of,
Isn't
you know,
that weird?
It's like, it's like they, some of these guys haven't, realized that the scouting report on Wisconsin isn't still Dick Bennett defense. I mean, they play defense still, but yeah. it's a whole different.
Still one of the best teams in the country, but.
But it's a whole different identity.
Yeah, you're totally right, and that is a good point. I should have brought that up already, the way that the nation still thinks Wisconsin plays ugly basketball. And, I mean, in some respects, this season in particular, they kind of have, but at the same time, it's not like that at all. But you're right. That left an imprint so firm that people still think that, they're going to be holding teams to, 20-point halves and whatnot. And that's, that's their bread and butter.
Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's a good thing for these guys. Yeah, they left. You want to be remembered.
Yeah, for sure. Mark Stewart is with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He covers prep sports. You can find all his stuff at jsonline.com. Really appreciate you stopping and sharing some memories. Anything else that that you recall? I mean, you just caught up with Mike Kelly not that long ago.
Right? Yeah. He was inducted into the Wisconsin Basketball Coaches Association Hall of Fame, which coincidentally, he and his wife Kelly OJ probably was – Kelly Kelly in high school was probably a better she may have been a better in terms of how she was regarded
a better
player than Mike, but they were inducted coincidentally on the same year.
Oh, that's really cool.
So it was great catching up with him, and I saw Andy Kowski at a New Berlin Eisenhower game a year or so ago, but they were just a bunch of great people to deal with. That's why I just remember when you talk about what you want in college athletes, you want them to be able to succeed on the court, but also in the big picture, you should also want them to have something else on their mind,
right?
And all those guys just had just different interests. Like I said, it was just an interviewer's dream.
And on top of it, just an interesting blend of backgrounds. Obviously, you've got the Wisconsin guys, Roy Boone, Kowski, Kelly. But then, you've got a D2 transfer in John Bryant. You've got Mark Vershaw from Illinois, sort of an unusual type player. You've got Dwayne, and you've got Kirk Penny, who's on the bench from Australia. Like, you've got guys from just a lot of different backgrounds, all of them seemingly coming together for this strange moment in time where they were able to just play this crazy good team defense. It was something else.
Yeah. Like I say, it's crazy, yeah. And lastly, real quick, a Division II guy being named the MVP of
the West Regional.
We might not ever see that happen again in our lifetime.
Totally right.
I mean, that was just, again, I could talk about this for a long time.
Yeah, John Bryant, we didn't say his name nearly enough, but his three-point shooting was significant throughout the tournament. And again, I did talk to John Bryant, talked to Mike Kelly, Kowski, Maurice Linton, who we didn't bring up very much here, but certainly a key cog as well, Dick Bennett, and put those interviews together for a big package that will be on this podcast feed next week, looking back at the 99-2000 Badgers run to the NCAA Final Four. Thanks again, Mark. We'll have to do this again about something, some unrelated. Maybe we can do like a recruiting look or something. I mean, we got guys like Jalen Johnson, Patrick Baldwin. We got to talk about those guys, right?
Yeah. I was going to say, hey, yeah, it'd be anytime for sure.
All right. Thanks for listening. Find us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher. Subscribe to us. Review us. You can find me. I'm J.R. Radcliffe on Twitter at J.R.R.A.D.C.L.I.F.F.E. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week for and you can hear from some of the guys who were part of this memorable run 19 years ago. Thanks for tuning in.